let's get back to the Connor Happer Show on 1620 The Zone.
Okay, welcome back. More of the Connor Happer Show here on 1620 The Zone and on 1620thezone.com. Creighton basketball, ensuring we all die young, giving us very, very high stress levels at various points over the weekend in route to the Sweet 16, which is by seed where they were supposed to end up. And now they have a matchup with the 2-seed Tennessee with potential 1 or 5 Gonzaga and Purdue waiting in the wings with a chance to go to the Final Four. I saw one thing on ESPN this morning because I always appreciate this day. There is like a re-rank of all the teams. You know, the top 16 teams that are left, and then they just rank them. But what ESPN decided to do today was like basically reseed them, which I feel like is odd thing to do. I wonder where you would have Creighton in that group. But if you guys notice, we did get chalk. We did get chalk over the weekend. We'll have a little bit more on that throughout the show. But let's talk about the Jays in particular first. Like I said, they are trying to make us all die. But the thing about them is, and we'll have more depth on this when we hear from Stephen Ashworth later on in the show. Yes, we'll have exclusive audio from that's how I should have said it at first, by the way. Exclusive audio from the locker room. After the game, but you couldn't help but notice when you walk out for double overtime in an NCAA tournament game with your life on the line and the whole thing, right? I mean, this group, we don't know what's going to happen to them after this season. I think it's fairly obvious that you're going to lose Trey Alexander. You're going to lose Baylor Shireman, and you know, that's a big part of your core and who's been around for the last few years. And you're fighting for your life in the NCAA tournament with narratives abound, and they walked out there like it was, I don't know, June or something like that. They're kind of looking around and you know, winking at the crowd and getting involved in that a little bit. Like they kind of have no pulse. It's a very odd sight. It doesn't make any sense to me because I sat there the entire game sitting next to the two biggest balls of stress on any side of the Mississippi, John Bishop and Nick Baugh, over the weekend. Like, I think my traps hurt because, you know, at various points during the weekend, Nick would just reach over and, you know, do the like the stress massage, you know, like slap the leg every now and then. It's freaking me out the entire game. So I'm sitting there banging the table and fist bumping and stuff like that and trying not to make noise because I don't want to, you know, go over the broadcast and everything. But
what a professional.
I'm sitting there sitting next to the two biggest balls of stress in the entire world. And meanwhile, Creighton just kind of moseys out on the court and they're like, all right, 5 more minutes. We get to do this again. You know, why not? Trey Alexander had to D up against Cousinard going in, you know, to that overtime. That's an underrated play from that game. And that's what brings me to the first point. The absolute stones on that team. Everybody makes clutch plays. Everyone. We'll go through them all in a second. Everyone makes clutch plays to both keep Creighton in it, and then finally the Avalanche hits in double overtime. The patented Josh Creighton Avalanche finally hits in double overtime.
The rare double overtime,
yeah,
Avalanche.
I thought for sure it wasn't going to happen on that night. I was really locked in for another 5 minutes of stress, but it was nice to have that release there in the second overtime. I'll start with Ashworth's, you know, Stephen Ashworth's three with 5 minutes to go. Creighton's struggling. They got to get a timeout. They haven't scored in 7 minutes at that point. It's like, oh my, I don't think it's happening tonight. They just don't have it. They keep generating pretty good looks. Oregon did a much better job in the second half, obviously, to kind of slow them down. And, you know, that's when Cousinard got really, really cooking. And I just thought, like, I talked to Nick about it at halftime on our halftime show, Nick Hanley. And I said, like, if you're looking at this from a broad perspective, you're thinking, man, you know what? If Creighton just, they're generating great looks, they're not going to stop generating these great looks, and they're going to fall at some point, right? If you're looking at it from a 40,000-foot view. But I'm thinking about it in the stress ball, mm-hmm. and I'm thinking, if this game is close and Oregon is able to turn it into the game that they want to turn it into, which was definitely happening in the first half and certainly happened in the second half, they have Cousinard and Dante. You know, and I thought I thought Dante and Kalkbrenner kind of, you know, canceled each other out. Obviously, they both did really, really good things in the game, but they kind of canceled each other out a little bit. They were both ginormous presences in the game, but Creighton couldn't do anything about Cousinard, really. And then they changed it up, and they felt like they had to really pull that big red, you know, hit that big red button and say, look, we have to do something about this. We got to get the ball out of his hand.
Yeah.
And so they started high-hedging on those screens. And for Ryan Kalkbrenner to high-hedge way up there beyond the three-point line and then ultimately get back in cover, have a couple blocks on the back end of those plays. I mean, unbelievable effort from him to ultimately. Because that takes a lot for Creighton. They are who they are almost 100% of the time. But they felt like in that moment, hey, we have to really do something about this.
Hey, we know you play 50 minutes here in this double overtime game. We don't have much of a bench, but could you do a little more?
We're gonna have to get you running.
Yeah.
A little bit. And so even with that, that's just on the defensive end. Mm-hmm. Even with that, they gotta figure it out on offense. And it was just, I mean, nothing was going.
Real quick, right there. You were busy during halftime, but I was in my car listening to Nick Baugh and John Bishop do a sterling broadcast. And during halftime, Nick Baugh addressed the very thing I was thinking, which makes him very good at his job. Hey, these three-pointers, they're not falling, and they're not falling in mass. Maybe just give it to Tree Man. And Nick Baugh said, but Josh, well, not specifically Josh, but person who's saying give it to Tree Man, these are wide open looks. Eventually, they will just fall. You got to trust me on this. And I said, okay, Nick Baugh played basketball. I haven't. I'll trust him.
It's hard. It's hard to trust in that.
It is.
They kind of had to a little bit. And they clamped down. Mm-hmm. Oregon clamped down in the second half. Yeah. I think they made it a lot harder for Creighton to sort of maneuver. And it just felt like every shot was tough. And so they went through a giant drought. Like I said, I think it was almost 7 minutes. And then all of a sudden you look up and there's 5 minutes to go in the game and your season's on the line and you're down by six and you're like, we haven't scored six all night. Like, how are we supposed to get six? How are we supposed to make up six when they have, you know, the human microwave on the other side? And Steven Ashworth hits, I mean, to rise with that confidence to get it from 6-3, and Creighton hasn't made any, and this is coming out of a timeout. So all of their eggs were in that basket. Whatever they got on that possession, I think was going to tell you a lot about how that game went. And
if we die, we die.
It was kind of that. It was kind of that. And it ended up in his hands, and he rose up confidently and drained it and made it a three-point game, and you're like, oh, okay. They can go in, you know, they can go in. And still, even then, you know, it was either then or you're down by, you know, four with a minute left. And you're like, boy, I just don't know. I don't know if it's going to happen. They inbound the ball to Dante. Dante misses the front end of the 1-1. You know, Baylor comes back and he gets the runner to tie the game. And so many things had to go right for them in that last stretch. And that's what happens in the NCAA tournament sometimes. It's not easy to make the second weekend. It is not easy to make the second weekend. Trey Alexander, Dean up on Cousinard at the end of overtime to prevent the ultimate pain of Cousinard just basically single-handedly beating you. Baylor Shireman hitting the mid-range jumper. Nothing had gone right for him. Baylor Shireman went 6 of 16.
He added a lot in the last stretch of the game, but I mean, it was worse than that for a long stretch.
And then his defense on Cousinard too, when they're trying to, you know, really figure that thing out. And then Ryan Kalkbrenner, hitting the three, obviously, which was like one of the most unbelievable moments I've ever seen.
The dagger three. Oh, you're going to leave me out here? Okay, watch this.
But like it's... they're up by three, and you're like, okay, we're starting to feel good about ourselves. Maybe this isn't the one.
Right.
I asked everybody in the locker room after that about after the game, and I think you'll like their answers that you'll hear during the show. But getting back and covering when they went to those high hedges, and you know, I want to talk more about him in a second. And then there's Jason Green. Jason Green had 9 rebounds. He had only had 3.
What a story.
In any other game this year. He was unbelievable. He got Creighton so many more extra possessions, hustle plays, and then the poetic justice of him getting the putback tip dunk in the second overtime as Creighton's pulling away was just, like, perfect. It's just perfect.
I love the story Mac told in the post game of I ran into it. What was
his parents.
His parents on the street, and, like, I got a feeling you're – now, maybe he says that to everybody's parents. Hey, I got a feeling your kid's going to play really well today. But, you know, also, maybe he doesn't.
Well, just with their physicality, you felt like it was going to be a little bit of a Jason Green game. Mm-hmm. You know, that's kind of how they have deployed him this year. And, oh, my God, he was everywhere. He was fantastic. They obviously don't win that game without him. To have that moment at that point in that game – in the season was it was pretty special. And so they needed all that stuff. Everybody to a man made clutch plays to either keep Creighton in it or put Creighton ahead in a game that was so freaking tense. So tense. And that's why it goes on the Creighton basketball game all time pantheon. That's why it goes on the Mount Rushmore.
It's in there with Florida. It's in there with the Baylor revenge game, not Baylor Shireman, the Baylor Bears revenge game.
Yes.
Last year, what else?
That game in the round of 32 last year in Denver with Baylor, like that was like a sweet release, you know? Mm-hmm. It was like, oh, wow, they're going to, you know, it took a while to convince me, hey, they're going to, it's the day, you know?
Today's
right
the day.
Right up until Slow It Up and Nembhard hits three. Right up until that day, up until that second. And then it was like, oh, because I tried to ask Mac about this before the game in the in-between day, just kind of comparing the feeling going into that game where it felt like, well, I know Creighton was a 6 and Baylor was a 3 in that game last year, but it felt like there was just so much pent up, like, they had been to a Sweet 16, but they kind of hadn't because it was in the bubble. And, you know, you want to knock them for who they beat to get into the Sweet 16. Like, I get it. You know, they beat Ohio to get into the Sweet 16 in a bubble. In a bubble, Josh.
People forget about the bubble.
In the first time, right? So it didn't feel real. And so there was pressure. Like, you know, Creighton had the kind of moniker all the way leading up to that game where it's like, can they win in the postseason? Can they do it in the postseason? Can they only get this far? And they did it, and it was like, whew, now we take the top off. And then they win again. And then they get to the Elite Eight game, and they were certainly capable of winning that one as well. And this year, I don't know if there was a pressure going into it, but it certainly wouldn't have been the same reaction if they lost.
Right.
It would have been – I don't know what would have happened.
Oh, disappointing season.
Losing to Dana Altman.
Never beaten Dana.
And the 11 seed and the whole thing. Like, it was – I don't know. And so I thought the kind of – tenor and emotion going into it was a little bit different, and that's why it goes I don't think it's like a terribly rewatchable game, you know. I don't know that I want to put myself through that again.
Probably not.
Until the second overtime.
Yeah, there was
and
some,
then it was like, oh, this is the greatest thing of all time.
There would be some the rough payoff, shooting to watch in the first half.
The payoff was unbelievable. Mm-hmm. The payoff for it was I mean, the Jason Green, there was the one, obviously, like, super proud section of Creighton fans behind the Creighton bench. And I think that was as much noise as, like, 2,000 people could physically make. that was as good as it gets.
I would still be shocked if I rewatched the game and Cousinard passed it to Dante. Like, oh, my gosh, he did it. He passed it to the guy he can't pass it to.
There's that, you know, Dana lost his mind. Mm-hmm. And there was just the general presence of Jason Green that Dana Altman was just freaking out. Because that's how, I mean, that was their path. That was their path to winning that game, slowing things down and getting Creighton off kilter a little bit. And they succeeded in all those. They got a couple more possessions, a couple more hustle plays, just infuse a little bit of energy into that thing. And Jason Green provided that on Saturday night. So let's talk about Ryan Kalkbrenner real quick.
Tree man.
Yes.
Is he any good, Connor?
I'm here to tell you, Josh, that he is good. That he's really good.
How good?
I still see, first of all, to watch him battle Dante for 40 minutes, and by the way, you know, Kalkbrenner was on the floor for almost 50 minutes in that game. He came out for the 30 seconds. And for the 30 seconds he came out, Trout got cooked and then tried to make up for it in the back end with a three and missed, right? Those are the 30 seconds he was out. Creighton went bad offensive possession, free 2 points and bad offensive possession. He's kind of like the most important piece to the puzzle. I'm not sure if I've said that before or if you guys have heard that before. But to watch that game and to watch him go up against Dante and say, oh, well, Dante killed him. It's just not the truth. I don't know what game you were watching. That is your preconceived notion. That is your preconceived narrative telling you that Kalkbrenner isn't this, and Kalkbrenner isn't physical, and he's not this and this and this. Like, just because he doesn't look like Adama Sanogo doesn't make him not good. He is one of the most impactful players in Creighton basketball history. And now he is one of the most decorated players in Creighton basketball history. Ryan Kalkbrenner has more NCAA tournament points than any Creighton player ever. Ryan Kalkbrenner has the second most rebounds in NCAA tournament games in Creighton history, only behind Paul Silas. Ryan Kalkbrenner has the record for most block shots in Creighton NCAA tournament games. Ryan Kalkbrenner has played the most games in a Creighton uniform in an NCAA tournament. Ryan Kalkbrenner has now won eight NCAA tournament games in a Creighton uniform. The most ever. He is one of the best Creighton basketball players of all time.
Gasp.
I'm telling you.
Connor.
And you're not going to realize it until he's gone. Sadly. He is one of the best, most decorated, most impactful, whichever way you want to describe it, Creighton basketball players of all time. His number will go in the rafters.
Ooh.
Yeah. And if you want to put a silhouette behind it, it's him shooting the three in double overtime, which is, you know, amazing and poetic.
I mean, five blocks on Saturday.
He is one of the most decorated players, and he is the most decorated player in terms of team success in Creighton basketball history. That's not a conversation. If you want to put him there with Doug and put all of Doug's personal accolades there, like, it's a hard argument.
Doug's probably going
to
win that,
right?
Yes.
It's a hard argument, and I wouldn't subscribe to it.
It's a team game, Connor.
But I'm inviting everyone to kindly shove it when they talk about Ryan Kalkbrenner. He is one of the best to ever do it, like, bar none. He dwarfs everyone in terms of postseason success. Isn't that what it's all about? Isn't that why we talk about dudes and rings and stuff like that? Like, isn't that why we talk about Tom Brady? Isn't it all about winning in March? When we talked about Greg McDermott prior to last year, oh, well, you know, can he do it in March? You know, is Creighton going to be able to ever make a Sweet 16?
Why do Creighton fans romanticize last season? Because they went to the Elite Eight.
Yeah. And you know who they had? Ryan Kalkbrenner. Among other people. Like, I'm not, his supporting cast is obviously much better than what Doug's was and whatever. But, like, they built the entire thing around him. It's all because of him. They look different. It probably doesn't work as well without him. And, I will not stand for the slander anymore. I was over it a long time ago, but I'm definitely super over it right now. Like, oh, you know, he's soft and he can't, Dante killed him. First of all, no, he didn't. And second of all, like, you got to get over it. He doesn't fit into a box of, like, he's not Shaq.
He's not Shaq.
All right? We got to get over this. Mm-hmm. This is basketball in 2024.
Big men don't look like Shaq anymore.
They don't. They don't. And if they do, guess what? They play 22 minutes a game, and they miss all their free throws. You know what Ryan Kalkbrenner doesn't do? Either of those. He plays every minute and is impactful in every facet of winning.
Jokic, exception that proves the rule.
Yes, that's true. Text from the 402.
Hi, 402.
These Kalkbrenner stats sound like those of a guy whose jersey will be retired from 10 years from now.
Did you text into the show, Connor?
That was not my phone number. Although I do have a 402 area code. That was not my text. And there's no doubt about it. I feel like it's important to put in perspective now. For whatever happens this weekend and whatever happens next year, that is the face of what this run has been for Creighton. They've been to 3 Sweet 16 in 4 years. He's been a player in all of them. Now, he wasn't necessarily he was a reserve on the first one. He was like an 8 minutes a game guy on the first team that went to the Sweet 16. But he's been there for all of it, and they don't do it without him. And they don't do it without all these guys. They're all equally, like, not equally, but like they're all important to the puzzle that Creighton has created. But you're trying to, you know, create a math equation that builds up to winning basketball, and Ryan Kalkbrenner, like, for the equation that they have created, he is the most important piece to it. Now, they could remath it without him, and they'll have to whenever he leaves. But he is, to the current equation that they have, he is the most important part to it. And he is the linchpin, and it does not work without him.
A couple of comments coming in on YouTube, Connor. I'd like your thoughts on. Asian Joe comments in.
Hi, Asian Joe.
Creighton basketball Mount Rushmore would be Korver, Doug, Benoit, Benjamin, and Calk then? Question mark.
That sounds right.
Yeah. Hurtin' Husker fan.
Does that sound? I mean, that sounds right.
Yeah. Who else would be in there?
Paul Silas.
Paul Silas. Yeah. Hurtin' Husker fan. I'm completely with you on Calk, Connor, but I would like your take on Edie. That's a guy that seems overrated every time I watch one of their games.
Also not true. He's gonna win the National Player of the Year again.
2 times in a row. First time since.
Long
time ago.
Maybe that's the point, right? Maybe that's where you get the overrated thing from. But
okay.
Like, I'd like to see. It doesn't work without him. Purdue is not that good mm-hmm. without him. Purdue's not probably any good without him. I don't think he is. I would be super curious. If we get that in the Elite Eight, that would be so much fun. That'd be so much fun. To watch those two go at it, and then those guards go at mm-hmm. it.
Jacob tweets into the show.
Jacob.
Mm-hmm.
We know many Jacobs, Josh.
We do. This is one of them. Dante shot 4 of 10 with a turnover one-on-one against Kalkbrenner in the post. Kalkbrenner was 3 of 4 and drew a foul against Dante.
Yeah. I'm telling you, this is what I hear after these games. It's like, he couldn't match up with Dante. He finally got a big... you know, that was worth his salt, and that big crushed him. What are you watching? What are you watching?
Say it, Connor.
What are you watching?
Say the line.
You don't know ball. You don't know ball. You don't, like, it's actually, Josh, it's not even that. It's not even that you don't, it's not that. It's you have your preconceived notions about what you think a guy is, and then you're applying that to what you're watching.
Antiquated notion of what ball is in 2024.
Do not apply it. All I'm asking you is to watch a game and watch it for the sake of watching it instead of thinking about your narratives all the time. That's all it is. Like, go in with a fresh mind. Think, oh, maybe this guy is pretty good. Or just don't think anything of him at all. But you go into it thinking, oh, look at him. He's kind of moseying around. And he's not he's not big this way. He's just big this way. He's not big horizontally. Right. And so you know, did you see DJ Burns? It's like, yeah, that guy's
good.
That's
a big.
That guy's good. That guy's good in his own way. He is. DJ Burns is good.
He's also enormous.
He also plays 20 minutes a game. You know?
They can't find clothes that fit
What do
him.
You want? The guy who's impactful for the entire basketball game or the guy who's sitting on the bench and you have to literally figure out how to survive in or change everything about who you are for the minutes that he's not on the floor? Take your pick. I'll take the guy who plays. I'll take Jokic over Embiid.
Bold.
I know, but people look at this and they're like, well, when they're on the court together, you know, the Embiid is dominant, this and that. Yeah, the guy on the other side plays.
Yeah.
He plays in all the basketball games, you know? So I feel like that's probably an underlooked aspect of Ryan Kalkbrenner's game, the fact that he plays in all of their minutes, like all of them. And yes, Creighton is definitely trying to survive, just live a little bit. You know, come up for air a little bit while he's out of the game. And he's never in foul trouble. Never. People talk about after the game, oh, you know, this is crazy. Oregon's only shot one free throw. This is unbelievable. You guys have never watched Creighton play. You never watched Creighton play. Nebraska fans, after their team is out of the tournament, they're like, oh, let's go watch this Creighton game and see if we can get happy a little bit and watch them lose. They're like, huh, I can't help but notice that the foul discrepancy is super odd and nobody for Oregon has shot any free throws yet. You haven't watched them. They don't foul. Their whole defense is built upon the idea that they keep people in front of you, and then they're like, oops, I guess I didn't keep you in front of you. Why don't you get funneled into Tree Man and he'll block your shot? That's their, and he doesn't foul. He stays in the game because he doesn't foul. He got one probably 3 minutes into the Akron game on Thursday, and not for 1 second I thought, oh boy, he's in trouble. Big man picks up one in the first 2 minutes of the game, and you're thinking, oh boy, do we sit him just to keep him safe for 5 minutes, make it to the next media timeout? Like, the answer is no, by the way. But if he gets a second, like, we got to put him.
Yeah.
Even if he did randomly pick up two fouls in the first 15 minutes of a game, I wouldn't feel like I had to sit him down. You know, they'd just go after him more and he would just block more shots.
It was, you didn't see this on the television broadcast. It was very clear that Spiro was not familiar with that aspect of Creighton's.
It was Catalan.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I was sitting directly next to him.
Spiro was in Memphis.
Yes, he was doing Nebraska.
Mispronouncing Tominaga's name.
Oh, I didn't get the chance to hear the audio of that. I just watched it. He didn't say Tominaga right.
He put a weird emphasis in the middle. It was like Tominaga or something like that.
Okay.
But yeah.
Interesting.
They were like, oh my gosh, there's only been one NCAA tournament game ever where a team didn't shoot a free throw. Oh my goodness, what's happening? This is incredible.
Shocking, right?
Creighton basketball.
Brian asks,
hi, Brian.
How far down the list would Ryan Kalkbrenner have been if I told you to guess which Creighton player hit a huge three to seal a Sweet 16 appearance? He would have been sixth. I think.
Trey, Ashworth, Farabello, Miller?
Sure. Yeah.
And then your next choice is probably who's going to hit a three, Isaac Trout or
Jason Green or Ryan Kalkbrenner. Yeah. Yep, those are your options.
Those are the only people that play.
I don't know. You could probably make an argument for him a little bit higher than that. But yes, it was quite the thing. Chris in Montana.
Hi, Chris.
Ryan was open so many times on Saturday night early in the set, but the ball didn't get to him by the time they crashed down on him defensively quite a few times. I think they're missing Nembhard, getting him the ball at the right time, especially early in the set. It's a little bit different this year. But Ryan Kalkbrenner is the real deal. They get away from that from time to time. They do. They fall away from that from time to time.
Couple passes on Saturday needed just a little more zip on them.
But I think they're so good in the flow of their offense usually, mm-hmm. where I don't need them to like force feed him. I certainly like when the ball's in his hands. And as Matt DiMarina says, he's a bit of a cheat code because he makes a lot of his shots, even if they're contested. as Jacob said before, 3 of 4 and drew a foul against Dante. Right? So I just want to make sure that I said that, because it's that's just true. Like, I don't want to be like, hey, man, this is my show and what I said, this is facts. Like, because this is what I talk about. I talk about facts. That is a fact. Ryan Cockburner is one of the greatest Creighton Blue Jays of all time. And you guys need to just get over it. You guys need to just get over it. It's time to accept the fate and the reality that you have. 3 Sweet 16s, Josh. Every time I talk about Creighton basketball, I think to myself, man, I remember when Terrell Taylor made that shot, and I thought that was going to be like the greatest moment of my life.
Oh, 23 in 23's old arena?
I remember when Nate Funk was dropping 17 points a game, and I thought, man, I don't think it's ever going to be this good again.
Here's the list.
Yeah, they beat Southern Illinois like 3 years in a row, and I thought, holy crap, wow. This is sweet.
Teams with 3 Sweet 16 appearances in the last 4 years. Gonzaga, 4 for 4. Houston, 4 for 4. UCLA, 3 of 4. Alabama, 3 of 4. Creighton, 3 of 4. End of list. I didn't hear a Duke in there. I didn't hear a North Carolina.
It's hard.
I didn't hear a Kentucky.
It's hard to do.
In there.
Ryan Kalkbrenner's played for all those teams, if I remember correctly. Is that right, Josh? Can you check me on that? I think it's right.
I will check you on that.
I think that is right.
You are correct.
I think that was... it was one of the most tense basketball games I've ever seen, certainly that I've had the pleasure of covering. It was a grind. It slipped, and then the Avalanche hit. As I said, my stress level was basically doubled from sitting next to 2 psychopaths, which I don't regret for a second.
Yeah, how was your production assisting?
I feel like I assisted production.
Okay.
Quite a bit.
Okay.
Quite a bit.
Were you writing on some Post-its for John and Nick? Here's a number. Here's a nugget.
No, I felt like that would just confuse them.
Sure. They're both.
They know what they're doing.
Long-standing professionals.
And in both games, Creighton was frustrated, and they just did not blink. I don't think that they have a pulse. I don't think that they have a real trackable pulse. Which
in a good way, not that they're dead. Not that they're dead.
I mean, they're dead. They're zombies. They're dead. They don't have blood going through their body.
Killers. Yeah. Assassins.
Well, it's not like the Creighton women's team has that to them.
They play tonight, by the way.
They're murderers. They're mm-hmm. like, that's what UNLV didn't realize when they were talking all that smack. You're dealing with a bunch of stone cold murderers on the other side. They'll kill you.
Watch out, Bruins. They're coming for you.
I don't get the sense that Creighton, the men are like that. But they have this like uncanny ability to be to you'll hear this from Ashworth later in the show. He was like, yeah, I think it's just, you know, we just really like playing with each other. And so there's never going to be a moment where we're like, oh no, this is reality setting in that it might like that's not going to happen to us. They're just walking out there for double overtime. La di da di da. And everybody's just losing their head.
Jay's Classic comments in on the YouTube stream.
Jay's Classic.
They are also a Trey Alexander turnover away from potentially being in the Sweet 16 in 2022. They also would have been a 2 seed in 2020. We are that close to 5 consecutive Sweet 16s.
To be fair to Jay's Classic.
Jay's Classic.
To be fair, I mean... Without Marcus Zagorowski, I don't think that team's getting the Sweet 16 in 2020.
Come on.
I mean, on 2022, I don't know how, but I mean, this person is correct. But that team should have been nowhere near Sweet 16. Much less, I mean, the round of 32 to push Kansas the way that they did that year. I mean, that was a hell of a deal. That year, but it's accurate, which is crazy to think about, and almost all of it coincides with the tree man inside. All right, any thoughts on that? Questions? We'll take them. Some comments on the other side as well, because I'm sure people are like, oh, you know, I don't know, Kalkbrenner.
He's just really tall.
You know, I guess he gets every call. I guess he doesn't foul, apparently. Yeah, that's correct. That's actually correct. I still want to talk about my Jack Gulke experience, which was so much fun.
Yeah, you were in the building.
And then we'll
for that game, right?
We'll talk about Nebraska, too, and plenty of stuff from the Jays locker room. Exclusive Connor Happer Show audio. That's right. Plenty more on the Connor Happer Show on 1620 The Zone.